Hey, Cracked fans. We are so excited to be welcoming our friends at Turna back to this show as a supporting sponsor moving forward. Now, of course, all of you tennis fans know Turna Tennis for their world-famous Turna grip, that iconic purple color grip you see on the rackets of so many different professional tennis players. But did you also know that they make the tackiest grip in the world? That's right, folks, the brand new Turna Tennis Mega Tack Grip. It's the tackiest grip on the market. It starts tacky and, simply put, stays tacky longer than any other grip you'll find out there. And if you tell your opponent, what do I use on my racket? I use the Mega Tack. You're going to be attacking with that Mega Tack from start to finish. If you've seen anything we do at Cracked Rackets, you know I'm a hairy guy. As you can imagine, I sweat when I play. The only grip that works for me is the Turna Tennis grip. Of course, the Mega Tack taking things to the next level. How can you get yourself hooked up with a Turna grip today? It's simple. You're going to either find it wherever you buy your tennis goods, or you can email them directly by emailing sales@uniquesports.com. That's sales@uniquesports.com. You mentioned Cracked Rackets sent you in the email. We would greatly appreciate that, as they let them know that we sent you there. But more importantly, you get a free sample and they'll treat you as family moving forward. Again, you email sales@uniquesports.com. You mention Cracked Rackets, you get the free sample, you get hooked up with our friends at Turna. Once you use a Turna grip, you're never going to turn anywhere else. Of course, again, ask them about the Mega Tack, the tackiest grip on the market. Contact sales@uniquesports.com and get started with our friends at Turna Tennis today. Welcome to... Hey, great shot. This is the Great Shot Podcast, a Cracked Rackets and Tennis Channel Podcast Network production. My name is Alex Gruskin. It is one of our favorite times on the tennis calendar right now here at Cracked Rackets. Those privileged weeks when the USTA Pro Circuit returns to our lives, we have ATP Challenger action on U.S. soil. Of course, last week, we all thoroughly enjoyed the Rome Challenger. I think just about everyone was talking about that Yibing Wu Ben Shelton final. Of course, this week, the Challenger Tour comes into Cracked Rackets' own backyards. It's in Indianapolis. Of course, this is the tennis gods laughing at me. The one week I'm not in Indianapolis, they bring Challenger tennis to our city. But of course, all of us get to enjoy all of this USTA Pro Circuit action, the magnificent tones and commentary of our friend Mike Cation each and every day on the live stream. That said, we have not yet had the opportunity to discuss either Rome or Indy yet on our podcast. And as I promised to all of you listeners, we planned on doing that this week. And if we're going to talk ATP Challenger tennis here on this podcast, all of you listeners know who I'm going to bring in to help me do just that. Of course, you know him as a returning champion on all of our Cracked Rackets platforms, whether that be as a writer here, a writer for Last Word on Sports, a writer for the Action Network, a writer for his All About Tennis blog, or perhaps most notably, always an astute writer with his comments on Twitter. Of course, we know him as our friend David Gertler. David, hey, great shot. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, thank you so much for having me. I'm doing pretty well. I am hanging in there. We're getting close to the weekend and the tennis has been really fun. And it's great. It's great how much variety we have right now in the schedule. We have some clay, some hard, some indoor hard. It's been fun to watch. And a lot of really talented players are emerging.
It's funny because the narrative, and a narrative is a fictional construct of, you know, things people are talking about. There really is no narrative. It is what we say it is. But there's always the narrative that it's a dead period after the slams, right? Us hardcore fans know those weeks after the slams where there's four ATP and WTA tour level events, where there's, what, six or five challengers happening during a given week. There's countless ITF results to monitor in the summer as well. This is one of those jam-packed
Ethan
weeks.
Quinn,
David,
right?
Gertler, exactly.
Did Ethan he win today? I watched him the other day.
So we had him on our SoCal Pro Circuit coverage. He won his maiden ITF singles title on our stream about a month ago now. My comparison to for him was Jack Sock. I think he's blessed with one of those shoulders, just like of those Cobra arms where just like the pace, the feel, it's all so easy for him. I'm not saying he's going to be as good as Jack Sock. I'm saying that's the sort of play style I see the best version of him being. You have enjoyed yourself a little Ethan Quinn. Good. We're off to an early tangent.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that he was both consistent, but he also, when he wanted to ramp up the pace on his ground strokes, he did so really effectively. I saw him against, I saw him in the last round. So he beat Ochi today in three sets from a set down. And then he also beat Alexander Brown, which I watched from a set down in the first round of Champagne.
Alexander Brown is just Alex Brown, the lefty, of course, for the record, us here at Crack.
Yeah, remember him in Challengers a while ago.
No, he goes by AB. He played at the University of Illinois for 5 years. That's, you know, friend of the show, for the record.
Oh, really?
I've never heard anyone call him Alexander before today.
Oh, well, so I'm sorry, AB. When I think of AB, I think of Antonio Brown.
Fair, but now I think given Antonio Brown being Antonio Brown now, can we give the nickname to Alexander, as you call them, AB?
Yeah, let's give it to Alex or AB or
The ones who know him well call him Biz. I don't know him well enough to call him Biz. I do know him well enough to call him AB.
What up, Biz?
Anyways, with that said, no, I agree. I enjoy the game of Ethan Quinn, and it's a tangent and a podcast I'll actually be doing, I imagine, sometime next week with the GOAT, Collette Lewis. The Kalamazoo field this year, David, is out of this world. Out of this world. I mean, you've got Ethan Quinn, you've got Sebastian Gersny, Alex Mickelson, who just combined to win the Wimbledon junior doubles title. Michael Zhang just made the junior Wimbledon final. I don't think Bruno Kuzahara is playing, but he's eligible to play. I'm pretty sure Martin Dahm will be in the field as well. Ozan Kolak is a top 10 junior in the world. Ethan Quinn, I already mentioned, going to be in the field. A bunch of freshmen coming back from college, like Jack Anthrop, who's been a top 30 junior in the world. And it's, you know, again, I can name 20 more. 20 more. The field, the depth is there right now. Like, this is the most interesting Kalamazoo tournament since the Tiafo Kozlov Fritz days.
What about the guy who played, the young kid who played Goyowitz in the first round of Indy? He was pretty impressive.
Oh, Bosforetti, 17 years old. Another one who will be in the field, correct.
He hung in there really
Samir
well.
Samir Banerjee, last year's junior Wimbledon champion, going to be in the field.
It's going to be, yes, and I remember him from Atlanta. I believe he played Atlanta Qualies or at some point.
Do you remember the name Milan Hurrien, or do you know that name? Melon Hurrien is how it would, M-I-L-L-E-N?
I don't
think Anyways, so. Was an All-American at Kentucky. We hosted an ITF, an ITA event in the summer of 2020, you know, right when tournaments were coming back post-COVID. And so a lot of people played it because it was one of the first events back on the schedule. Hurrien played it, and Bosforetti, who was 15 years old at the time, played it. Bosforetti went up 3-0 on Hurrien in about 7 minutes. And Hurrien, who was 21 years old to Bosforetti's 15, looks at me because I was line judging the match at the time. And he goes, dude, I think this kid's Novak Djokovic. And like, it wasn't an unreasonable thing to say in that moment because the way Bosforetti hits the backhand, it's gorgeous.
He was hanging, he was hanging in there in the rallies, you know, because Goyowitz has so much power, but it didn't seem like that. I'm going to keep butchering his last name, but
Bosforetti.
It didn't seem like it fazed him. He hung there. He hung on to the baseline. He didn't get pushed back into defensive position because with as fast as Indianapolis is playing, you can't be too far behind the baseline. You have to have your feet planted on the baseline or else you're going to get blown off the court. And Bosforetti did a great job of, you know, he doesn't have overwhelming power from what I saw, but he was able to just do those little things well. And that was what I took away from that match.
Absolutely. And again, I'm not saying he's going to be the next Novak Djokovic. I'm saying to watch a 15-year-old do what he was doing, it wasn't crazy to say that out loud. And he's a former Le Petit Oz champion, and he's had a bunch of injuries throughout the course of his junior career. But when he's healthy, he strikes the ball so beautifully. And again, a testament to the depth in that Indy field, in this Kalamazoo field coming up in August. And we'll talk about that Kalamazoo field with Collette Lewis coming up next week. But again, the reason I wanted to have you here today, David Gertler, and we're already off to a tangent, is to talk about all of the USTA Pro Circuit action you and I have absorbed over the past 10 days. Of course, shout out to our friends at Turna for their support of this podcast. Allows us to record at 3:39 Pacific time on a Thursday about whatever it is we'd like. And today, it's the Roman Indy Challenger. Of course, all of you already know. Turna provides the best grip in the business, award-winning strings, so many more products to help accentuate the final features of your game. To join the Turna team, just email sales@uniquesports.com. You mentioned we sent you. They'll hook you up with discounted pricing, hook you up with free samples, treat you like family as well. Again, sales@uniquesports.com. With that said, David Gertler, let's get into our Rome and Indy conversation. And the place we have to start is with 22-year-old Yibing Wu. Of course, Yibing Wu was a former junior U.S. Open champion. I believe he wins the title back in 2017. And look, there's a mixed bag in the history of junior slam champions. We don't have to go over all of it. Philip Peluo made all four junior slams his final year of the juniors. If you would have asked me, and I think that was 2012, was his final year of the juniors, which is when I was at my, you know, reading Colette Lewis every day, waiting for it to come out each and every day, hitting refresh on my laptop at tennisrecruiting.net, just waiting and waiting and waiting. And, you know, every week there's another Philip Peluo accomplishes this, he accomplishes that. I would have bet the house that he was going to be not just a top 100 player, but a top 10 player in the world. Obviously, that never happened. Again, a Gianluigi Quinzi, who it looked like when he, you know, making his run, like this guy was going to make it. Ultimately, he doesn't. There are countless examples you can turn to, both positive and negative, with the Junior Slam champions. So you never try to read too far into that. But, you know, you go back to 2016, 2017, when Yibing Wu's getting onto the Challenger Circuit, or, you know, Future Circuit, or getting a wild card and wins the Shanghai Challenger back in 2017 at, you know, prior to turning 18 years old. There was clearly a future for him, and, you know, 2018, 2019, he's still continuing to progress up the rankings, but then, you know, he doesn't play a match between 2019 and 2022. He's, you know, dealing with I believe it was an elbow injury or a shoulder injury. I'll look that up, double check that in a moment, but, you know, that injury keeps him out between March 2019 and the start of January this season. You look for Yibing Wu now, David, 24-4. Overall, in 2022, he wins a Futures in Orange Park to start the season. He quarterfinals after coming through qualifying in the Zagreb Challenger. He wins the Orlando Challenger, one of like two guys to have beaten Jason Kubler in the past 3 months. He wins the Rome Challenger, knocks off JJ Wolf, knocks off Ben Shelton, and doesn't drop a set on his way to that Rome title. Of course, this week he's yet to drop a set, wins over Hani Habib, Peter Goyacek. I watch Yibing Wu play, and I just don't see a weakness. And listening to Mike on the broadcast, listening to Mike call Yibing Wu elite, anyone who knows Mike Cation, and I know I tweeted this out, but anyone who knows Mike knows he is the last person in the world to use words like that. Because the last thing Mike wants to do as the commentator, he knows it's his role. If he has unreasonable expectations for someone, everyone watching is going to think, okay, well, his expectations must be correct. And so this guy must be legit. The last thing Mike wants to do is burden someone unnecessarily with a word like elite. He called him elite. And watching Yibing Wu, I have no dispute for that fact. The forehand, the backhand, how comfortable he is on the slide, the weapon that is his first serve. I mean, you look for him in Rome. He was broken a grand total of three times.
Twice, actually.
Oh, you're right. I looked at the Hadi Habib match. Twice total in five matches he's been broken. Yeah, three times total in his, what, last seven victories? I mean, the numbers say it. The eye test says it, David. He's currently, you know, 153, I think, in the points race, which I still think is underselling just how freaking
good he's been
this season. Where are you with the 22-year-old? What have been your takeaways? What do you think allows him to thrive?
Yeah, so you mentioned a lot of it. So the first off, the pop he gets off his racket, especially that forehand, is unbelievable. It just explodes off his racket into pinpoint targets. You mentioned the serve. Yes, two breaks in Rome, three total in his last seven matches. Let's also say the return, though, has also been very impressive. He held JJ Wolf indoors who is, we all know, JJ Wolf is an unbelievable indoor hardcore player. He held him to 57% of his first serves won and 40% of his second serves won and broke him four times.
Yeah.
In two sets.
And just like took away the plus one forehand. Just the depth of the Yibing Wu return. Because, you know, my comparison for him, I think he's in, sorry to cut you off, but I think he's in the, you know, another DG near and dear to your heart. I think he's in that David Goffin, Tommy Paul, to a lesser extent, Sun Wu Kwan model of player, where it's just like, look, they're not, I mean, Tommy's forehand's a little bit bigger, so maybe I shouldn't include him on that list, but it's like, look, they're not, just not going to beat themselves. Like, there's right. just no glaring thing you can attack over and over and over again with the expectation of continued success.
Absolutely. And he just keeps shutting down these big servers. I mean, yeah. Blake Sheldon, or sorry, not Blake Sheldon, Ben Sheldon, 47% of his second serves. Now I do think that Sheldon's second serve is a weakness. I'm sure we'll a little bit, mm-hmm. Which we, I'm sure we'll talk about a little more later. Goyo, which I totally butchered that pronunciation today, 6-4, 6-2, but Peter only won 57% of his first serve points and was broken three times. I just don't see, as you mentioned, the weakness. I don't know where he's going to break down, because he took out that Jason Kubler match you mentioned before in Orlando. That's looking more and more impressive too. And don't yeah. let the retirement in that one scare you away. He was winning and he was dominating. He was the better player in that match, even when Kubler retired. I just don't, I mean, there's so many good things to say. You've mentioned a lot. I've mentioned a lot. I don't know what the ceiling looks like. Honestly, I want to see him in more ATP events. It does suck for him that the China part of the ATP tour swing was canceled, because I think he could have got some wild cards and we could have seen him on the bigger stages. But I definitely think by next season, I would be absolutely stunned if he's not in the top 100.
I said the same thing on a podcast earlier this week. I think both he and Ben Shelton, if the cards break right and they play a full schedule, they're healthy, they should both be top 100 by the end of this year. I feel pretty confident in saying that about both of them, and I don't say that lightly. And, you know, watching Jensen Brooksby in 2021 and his run through the Challengers, and just to see what he was capable of doing when he made that next transition to the ATP level, it just like shows you again how thin the margins are. And it happens every year. Griekspoor, Bonzi, Molchan, who have all established themselves as top 50 players, Cerundolo, Baez, etc. The gap's just not that big. Yeah. And like, part of it's about opportunity. Part of it's about health. The other thing is, to your point, like, it just makes, like, compared to Brooksby even, like, Yibing Wu's success just makes sense. Go watch him play tennis. You're just like, oh yeah, this guy's really good. Like, the backhand, the drive he's able to produce, the depth of on his return. There's no extraordinary or wasted backswings on any of his shots. And just like, to your point, watching him, he's the only guy I've ever seen, and I mean, I still haven't seen Shelton play a top 100 guy, but he's the best guy I've seen to date where the Ben Shelton ad side slice wide was just like a little less effective, because you just don't want to serve to the Yibing Wu backhand.
Yeah, and I also think that he has a great mentality on court,
yes.
too. I remember when he went down that set to Kubler, and it was hot in Orlando. It was a tight tiebreak. I thought that Wu was just going to mentally, you know, go away. And he didn't. He fought right back, and he turned that match around. And so, you know, this week he was down in the first set, I believe. Hadi Habib had 2 set points in the first set. And yep. I thought, oh, Wu might be fatiguing. Nope. He broke from that 40-15 deficit and ran away with the match from there. So I think that mentally he's in the right place, but I want to see him in those ATP tour events. I want to see him against that higher level competition, and I want to see him more off of hard courts before I make anything too bold, but in terms of predictions. But I do think that top 100 is in sight. And here's an interesting question for you. Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn the tables a little bit here.
Would have
you
it no other way.
A lot of about Jensen Brooksby. Who do you think has a higher ceiling, Brooksby or Wu?
See, this is why we invite you on the show, David. It's a great question. I like Yibing Wu serve better. I think that's where it starts. You look for Yibing Wu, whose ace percentage right now, 3.9%. That's not great, but he's winning 69% of his first serve points. He just hits his spot so well. And I keep using this Bradley Klonism to describe the game, and it's not unique to him, but I'm sure listeners are sick of hearing me say it. He just spreads the court so well. Three cross courts to open the inside in down the line. Backhand down the line. Short angles. Drop shot. Just the variety he plays with, the pace, the court sense he has, how well he structures the, you know, each and every point. Brooksby's improvisation. And yeah, Brooksby's relentless, and it's always the high percentage play out of Jensen, but you never know how Jensen's going to win the point. Like, you're never quite sure how this right. point's going to end. Sometimes it's a pulled trigger backhand down the line. Sometimes it's the last two-handed backhand drop shot on the ATP tour. You know, Yibing Wu's game just makes sense. I've seen it before. It's that said, I mean, Brooksby's already been a top 40 player in the world. Like, there are only 40 of them. And given right. Yibing Wu's health track record, you're right. You need to see more before you see it. But if they played right now, who are you picking? Outdoor hard court.
Oh, man. I would probably say Brooksby in three. But for now. In a year from now...
Yeah, they're not that dissimilar in age. Brooksby's a little younger, but not by much.
Not that experience at the top level yet.
No, certainly, certainly. But Yibing Wu's feeling himself right now. It's just like, what is Jensen going to do to hurt Yibing?
You're right. I'm trying to give Brooksby...
No, it's a really good match. That's what I'm saying. But at the same time, Jensen's going to absorb that pace. He is going to change direction. And talk about ping pong tennis. Like, it'll get extraordinarily physical. And again, we know... the physicality of Brooksby wins out. We've seen that over the past 18 months. We just don't know that as definitively about Yibing.
He did look really good in the heat of Orlando.
Looked great. He's only looked good this year. He's 24-4. Yeah. Yeah, and so I'm in. I mean, again, this time next year, is he top 100?
If he's not, then he got injured.
I agree. Well said. All right. With that in mind, let's move on to the guy he beat in
Blake Sheldon.
Yeah, exactly. In the Rome Challenger final, and a guy who advances, you know, down the first set 7-6, but an injury to Tim Van Rijthoven means Ben Shelton advances today to another Challenger quarterfinal. You look for Shelton, who's at, according to Mike, I think 310 in the live rankings based on the Champagne Challenger title he won at the end of last season. And, you know, in July of last year, and he goes, you know, since November, winning the ITA All-American. He's made Champagne Challenger quarterfinals, Little Rock semifinals, Rome finals, now into another quarterfinal here, 25-7 in his last 52 weeks on the Pro Tour, 27-10 overall, if you include the start of last season. I mean, again, you look for Ben in his run in Rome, had to come through qualifying, was only broken, what, five times in seven total matches. Generally, that gets the job done. He Absolutely. Won 70% of his first serve points, making 72.5% of his first serves against Yibing Wu, and he lost the match. Like, Yibing played exceptional. This match lived up to the hype. It was 5-all. There was nothing separating the two of them, and it felt like every 15-30 or, you know, 40-30 point, Ben was able to find the slider out wide with the +1 forehand to the open court, hit that +1 ball behind Yibing Wu. It's just, you see the power tennis. You see the recipe for Ben to win easy points. This is your first time really getting to see the backhand tested, David. This is your first time getting to see it over multiple matches. You know, I've been hyping him up to you for a while. Did it live up to it? Where are you with Ben Shelton?
So I first watched Ben Shelton at the US Open qualifying last year sure. against Michael Moe. And I thought to myself, you know, even though the match was close, there's no way Michael Moe is losing this match to this college kid. And Ben shut me up. There's so many elements of Ben's game that I'm impressed with. First off, you've mentioned it, the slider on the ad side out wide, especially on break point. Mm-hmm. That is such an important serve to hit. And I think that he's going to give players fits over the years. I don't know how any college players, you know, beat him. Maybe besides like the Kovacevic's of the world. The pro players struggle with him greatly with that serve. The next thing that impresses me is how big he goes on his ground strokes while still maintaining control. He is hitting that forehand huge, but unlike some players where the bigger they go, the more unforced errors, and it can turn into just an unforced error fest. With Ben, he is able to maintain control and hit his spots on, especially his forehand, but his backhand too, very effectively. And you mentioned backhand being tested. I think it's held up pretty damn well. Now, there are a few areas that I think can be improved. I think that the second serve against the higher level competition against TVR Van Riethoven today, he only won 35%. Against Wu, he only won 47% of his second serves. I think that it can sit up in the box a little bit, which is not exposed that much on the Challenger Tour, but I think as he moves up to the ATP Tour, it's going to be somewhere where he can tweak, you know, and work on it a little bit. I think that while he's not bad at the net, I think that he's still learning the right times to come in and becoming more comfortable there. You know, this is just based on, you've obviously watched him a lot more than
no,
I
have. No, but this is what I want to hear. So do you view his backhand as more of a placeholder or more than that?
I think it's a placeholder for now, but I think it can develop into more than that. I don't think it's a major weakness.
Yeah.
I think that his forehand's just so good that it makes his backhand look weaker than maybe it is.
So what to you is going to hold, if he doesn't make the top 100, why? Can I offer a postulate and hear your response? The forehand swing can be big, and I would like to see it tested by bigger pace. That said, like against Van Riethoven today, you know, he kept pace and like he was right there on serve. When he has time on the forehand, it's a weapon. I think that forehand's going to translate well on a clay court as well with just how well he rips it. But I do want to see, you know, again, like it's a big swing, right?
That is, now that you say that, I didn't think about that before, but you're totally right. It is. Yeah, that is a great point.
That said, though, he handles it pretty well. And like he just has the size to be okay.
Indy is about as fast of a hard court as I've seen around in a while, and he's handled it pretty damn well.
I agree. This is why I think the answer is he will be a top 100 player, now, obviously.
Now, I want to see him. Yeah, he was down a set to TBR. He had a couple – the double faults were an issue today. He had
double fault percentage for him, by the way, so far in his pro career. That is definitely the biggest number because it's over, you know, 5%. And like, that's no bueno.
And he had two in the tiebreak today, including one on set point. I also noticed in the tiebreak today, he's been so good about staying patient and about really waiting for his opportunities, playing that higher margin, but still with power. Today in the tiebreak against TBR, and it might have been just a little bit of a blip, he did seem to rush things a little bit. I noticed against Hijikata in the second set, he was really going huge and like huge to the point where it just like seemed like he wanted to get the points done very quickly. He did run into a lines person and it seemed like things shifted after that. So I don't know if he got nicked up there, but we talked about how Wu went from Rome to Indianapolis and didn't skip a beat, really, and has held up physically well. I think Ben's held up pretty damn well physically, too. You know, he's now into his second pretty long week in a row, and he's done great. He's had some good wins, beating Rybakov, who's looked pretty good, Kovacevic on an indoor hard court. Hijikata didn't play poorly. He just was outclassed. Yukiyama.
No, I completely agree. And again, I think he is going to be top 100. I think he's going to be top 50. I think he has the size. He has the speed. He has the weapons. He doesn't have a glaring weakness. And he just has the it factor. If you've been around Ben, the guy's just a winner. I mean, he did it at Florida. Team championship freshman year. Individual championship when everyone's gunning for him that second year as a sophomore, and he wants to come back for more. And like, again, he's just going to be as good as he wants to be. And I think that is indicative of just the fact he's young. He's still 19. And like, he just has the biggest weapons on the court and he knows how to use them already. And you just can't teach that. And so I think we're both pretty high on Ben Shelton moving forward.
I'm very high.
Yeah. Top 50.
Oh man.
That's very high. No, no. At some point in his career.
Yes.
30.
Yes.
I agree. I'm not going to ask you more than that yet because it's still very, very early. All right. Let's talk about some of the other players that have stood out over the course of the 2 weeks. And, you know, again, David, you've been too kind to send this time. So I want to kind of rapid fire through some of them. I won't lie. I'm also a bit fatigued, so I don't want to offer incoherent thoughts, or at least any more so than usual, to all of you listeners. But let's start with some rapid fire thoughts from Rome. Now, I could do 3 minutes on why I'm continuing to be impressed by Patrick Maloney, who lost in qualifier to Patrick Kipson, but continues to look better and better. But let's look, you know, again, JJ Wolf's probably the guy most relevant to our listeners moving forward. Obviously, prior to injuries, just looked like a sure thing to head to the top 100, was dominating challengers, indoors, outdoors, didn't matter. On hard courts, he was winning them all. He's been extraordinarily injured. You know, in his first two matches, Wolf, pretty comfortable victories over Jerry Shung, 1-2 over Shinsaro Machizuki, 3-6. 4-1 loss to Yibing Wu. I don't think that's that bad of a loss, but what do you think about JJ?
Yeah, so the thing about JJ is, yes, he beat Chang and Mochizuki. Those are two players that are not going to have a lot of success on indoor hard.
Fair. Also worth noting, he lost first match this week to lucky loser Billy Harris, 6-4, 6-7, 7-6.
Yes, I was about to, yes. That's really, you know, losing to Yibing Wu at this point, that's nothing to be ashamed of. I'm not saying that losing to Billy Harris is something to be ashamed of, but it's concerning. You know, he only won 51% of his second serves. He was broken three times, but also the first serve return was not where it needs to be. Now, I've seen Billy Harris a few times. He has a pretty big serve, but it's not huge. It's not like Ivo Karlovic.
Sure.
But Billy Harris won 82% of his first serve points against Wolf. He's just got it. Maybe that's just a matter of Wolf going too big on returns as opposed to chipping him into play. I thought that actually Purcell today in Indianapolis chipped the return too much. But I think that especially on quick courts like in Indianapolis, it's important to chip, you know, get those chip returns, just get into play and start the point. And maybe sometimes Wolf goes too big, you know, on these hard serves. But like you said, he's been injured. I want to give him time. I want to, you know, to really get back in the swing of things. I'm sure he'll get a Cincinnati wild card and maybe that can spur a season. But yeah, I probably expected Wolf to be a little, you know, further along than where he is, but he's also been injured. So I don't want to knock him too much.
No, I think the real litmus test will be the wild card he just got into Cincinnati, right? Like that's obviously.
Did he officially get it?
He did. He just got a main draw wild card into it. So obviously that's going to be a massive test for him and a major opportunity. Semifinals Orlando, semifinals Savannah, quarterfinals Tallahassee, quarterfinals Sarasota.
Wait, can I stop you there though?
Please.
Semifinals in Orlando, but he didn't play well.
Well, that's the thing is, I think he's not playing his best, but he's playing solid. And he's currently at a career-high ranking, 105. Like, he's been fine. He's been fine. Yeah. He hasn't been great, but he's been fine. He looks like someone working his way back, but fundamentally, I still believe in his weapons, in his
strength,
I guess is the big thing, is I haven't been deterred, would be the big takeaway for JJ so far. But again, he makes a nice run in Rome. Certainly, Uchiyama, a good run. Where are you with Kovacevic? Because the tweets seem to indicate you've had a turn.
Oh,
Kovacevic,
man.
By the way, quarterfinalist last week, also into the quarterfinalist this week as an alternate into the main draw. Beats Kozlov in three sets, round one.
Here's why I've turned, because I think his backhand looks much better.
Okay.
So Mike noted this on the podcast or on the broadcast of his match against Sheldon. When he was just trying to get the backhand back into play, he was not nearly as effective as when he really went after. And I think he's at his best when he's going after that backhand, and he's done so fairly effectively. It's holding up much better than I expected. I thought that a lot of players would just target the backhand on these quick courts and he wouldn't be able to hang in there in the rallies. But he's really done a great job of keeping that backhand stable and actually doing something with the ball, not just slicing it back.
His forehand's also just a freaking weapon. Like, it just is. And he hits his spot so well on the serve. How easy the power is on the forehand to me is what's so impressive, David.
Have you seen the serve too? He's been broken one time in his first two matches here in Indianapolis. Didn't even face a break point against Shima Bukuro. He is hitting his spots. He not only hitting his spots, but with pace. And there's nothing you can do. It's hard to even get a racket on the ball. Kozlov is not a bad returner. And Kozlov was out of his league trying to face Kovacevic's serve. So won 90 or he won 88% of his first serve points against Shima Bukuro, and he won 80% of his first serve points against Kozlov, who, like I said, is not a bad returner.
I agree. Speaking of backhand turnarounds, Alex Rybakov, former TCU All-American, into the quarterfinals here in Indy, wins over Lexi Galarno, Mitchell Krueger to get there. Certainly Rybo, nice win over Kakao last week. He also, who knocked out Rybo last week? Let's see.
It was Shelton.
Shelton, 6-3.
It was closer than that, though.
A little lefty on lefty crime.
It was really tight, that match.
So what's changed for Rybo? I mean, he's always had the forehand. He's always moved well. Another one of those guys who just knows how to win tennis points. I know that sounds stupid, but there is just an intuitive court sense to his game.
So
hits the angles well.
Yes, and that again, that lefty slider out wide on break point is such an effective serve. But here's something else Mike talked about on the Mike Cation's going to be half this broadcast, half this podcast. Here's the thing about Rybakov is his attitude and his positivity on court. He was, even in the dying moments of that Ben Sheldon match, he was still fighting his ass off to just find a way to come back. And I thought that mentality, and you saw it even in this last match against Galarnow in Indiana.
Just call him Lexi.
Lexi. We have AB, now we have Lexi.
You can call him AG as well, because he's a fellow AG. Lexi's another good friend of the show.
Well, Lexi was the better player in that match against Rybakov. And it didn't matter, though, because Rybakov just never gave up. He hung in there in the rallies. Like Kovacevic, his backhand has improved. It's not this major weakness anymore. And he is able to hang in the rallies and be offensive. I like his net game. He understands the right time to come in, and he puts the volleys away effectively. And his first serve's a big weapon. He probably played his best match I've seen him against Mitchell Krueger in that Indianapolis match, because you'd think that Mitchell Krueger's backhand would be just fine against the Rybakov forehand, lefty forehand cross court into that backhand. But Rybakov was surprisingly effective, and I was really impressed. And maybe I oversold him a little bit because he didn't look that great against Lexi. He didn't hit his spots like he did against Krueger or even last week against Sheldon in the loss. But I've been pleasantly surprised.
Fair. I think he finds the angles really well. I think he fights extraordinarily well. It changes directions well. He's been grinding on the Challenger tours, played a ton of qualifying, but, you know, qualifies in, I don't know how to pronounce it, but, you know, one of the Challengers over in Europe and makes round of 16, qualifies in Oeris, makes the quarterfinals there, obviously round of 16 in Rome, quarterfinals here in Indy. I mean, he's 298 in the world. That's a new career high for the 25-year-old. Not ideal, but certainly better. And, you know, not ideal. Career high is always ideal. Not where he wants to be, But, you know, again, he is going to get to play the challengers this summer on the USTA Pro Circuit. If he plays them well, he will get into qualifying at the 2022 US Open. Now you're in the ballgame. And again, a guy who has hustled, future circuit, challenger qualifying, he's doing it the right way, or just the most admirable way, the toughest of ways. And yeah, is there an overwhelming strength to Raibo's game? No, there's not anything he's going to do that's just going to blow you off the court. But he's really smooth. And again, he has every shot in the book. Don't think you can just challenge that one-handed backhand with ease and get away with it. He's going to sneak it by you. He's going to play with variety. Yeah, I'm in on Raibo. I'm a fan, obviously, and a near and dear friend. All these college guys.
He went to TCU, right?
Yeah, that's the problem, is all these guys played college, and they're all in the Challenger circuit. So I'm not going to say anything bad about it. Well, I mean, there are some. I'll leave that to you. All right, Purcell Shelton, Kopfer-Kova, Uchiyama Eubanks, Wu Rybakov. Who's winning in Indy?
Oh, man. Oh, God.
Get Wu Shelton part two?
God, you're putting me on the spot here. I would say you will get a Woo win again. You'll get a, I think he wins the tournament. Do I think Sheldon gets there? It's so tough because what do you think? I'll spin it to you. Give me a second to think about it. What do you think?
I mean, I'm going to say yes, just for, because I would like it, because I would like to see it again. I would like to see, you know, if both guys make the final, we know who the two best guys are, like, for sure, and that they're both ready.
I think Kopfer beats him. Here's the deal.
That's the dark horse who, like, we're just not talking about.
Here's the deal. Dominique Kopfer is an incredibly good returner. He's in one of the most underrated returners in the game. He gave Riley Opelka fits in the past. Let me see that head to head because Kopfer is an incredibly that's why I think he beats Kovacevic, just because his return is so effective. Yes, that's the match I was thinking of. 2021 Wimbledon. He beat Opelka in straight sets. He beat Opelka in Madrid. He beat Opelka at the U.S. Open. He got Opelka to a third set tiebreak in Dallas. He can return big serves. I think he takes out Kovacevic, and I think that Sheldon runs out of gas against him. Yeah. Here's the wild card, though. Chris Eubanks on these courts.
That's what I'm glad you said it, because there are some big. I mean, just big serves, like. That's a tough matchup for Kopfer, just because, like, on these courts, it's an ice rink.
Well, Kopfer plays Kovacevic, but you.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Good call.
Wu would play Eubanks in the semifinals. Oof.
That's tough.
Unfortunately, I don't think Rybakov can beat Wu in the quarters. Yukiyama is a good ball striker, but I just think that Eubanks can serve him off the court.
Yeah. I think on these courts, Eubanks can serve freaking Djokovic off the court. It's going to be really fun. That's the thing. It feels like we have eight, I don't want to say worthy champions because that's so stupid, but they're all playing well.
Now, how do you think that Sheldon will do with Purcell's net rushing, with the kind of awkward, you know, Liam Brody said he was such like a nightmare to play or something like that recently on Twitter. Did you see that? I mean, Purcell is a really tricky player to face. And Sheldon, I don't know if do you think he's ready for a player like Purcell?
I'm fascinated to see that test. You're right. I want to see him face that physicality, that discipline, that creativity is the word I suppose I'm looking for. I'm very much looking forward to it. I think he can. Absolutely. Who's got the biggest weapon on the court?
I would say the best shot on the court is Purcell's volleys, but I would
over
say,
the bend serve wide.
Yes. Purcell's volleying, that game, I take over that. Yes, but I would say the biggest, if we're not talking about something like that, I would say the biggest shot in the court is Ben Sheldon's lefty serve.
Yeah, that's fair. I would agree with you. I guess, when you break it down like that, I get what you're saying. I agree. I also just think Ben's going to be able to pick on that backhand. And like on these courts, if Ben gets a plus one look at the forehand, Purcell's in trouble.
Yeah, but Purcell chips the, like I said.
That's true. It's going to be a fun. That's what's going to make it fun.
Yeah, it's going to be tight, I think. I don't think we get the same. I am now, I'm at my final.
Okay, decision. Good. This, we had to talk it out. I like it.
Wu will win it all. I think that, but I think that Sheldon will lose before the final.
All right. I like to hear it. I'll go. I said Ben was going to be top 10 by 2027. So I'll go Ben to win it because I think I've doubled down.
Do you think he has it in him physically?
Yes. 100% yes.
Okay.
That's the thing I maybe have the least doubt about with Ben. Guy's an animal.
Now, what's
not
the
yet,
deal with,
but he will be.
But is Ben, so he's not going back to Florida. Is that the final call?
No, that's not the final call. Anyone who asks him, he'll tell he's coming back. Do I believe him? No, not particularly. But he has many reasons to go back. That's why it's not off the table.
I mean, getting at his... Doesn't his dad the coach?
Dad's the head coach. Sister's there. Girlfriend's there. Life is there.
Yeah. And like, I mean, getting a degree is...
Matters. And maybe he's not ready for all that pro-life entails. I just think he's going to be ranked too high. Like, I just think he's going to play this summer. He's going to play this fall. And he's just going to be like, crap. I'm top 120. How can I go back?
He can't. I mean, honestly, you have to strike. In pro tennis, you got to strike when the iron's hot.
Exactly. It's like if you can be top 100 by that point by July of the following year and you can play the summer ATP hardcourt events or play main draws at slams, it's just like it's tough. It's tough. Right. But never say never. Never say never. With all that said, it is always a pleasure to get the chance to chat with you, David Gertler. And with that in mind, any fun things coming up from you content-wise? I know things may slow down a bit.
Oh yeah,
busy this summer.
I felt it was a lot, but it was fun. I have an article out tomorrow. I look at Cerebus Tormo Bondar in Palermo, and I look at Contivate versus Potapova in Hamburg. I'll tell you what, Anastasia Potapova is playing really well right now.
I'm going to be calling that match tomorrow. Very much looking forward to it. And I agree with you. I just did a segment on her on the mini break. That's hilarious that you say that. But we're looking forward to all of those pieces. And even if you're not a gambler, read David's previews just for the preview. I promise you will enjoy them. Of course,
oh,
a massive thank you to you for taking the time to join us here today. A shout out, as always, to super producer Daniel Westhoff for the of an editing job he does day in, day out, making all of this content possible. Shout out to our friends at Turner as well, by the way. Email sales@uniquesports.com to join the Turner family today. Final thoughts belong to you, David Gertler.
Yes, I've heard from you that Westhoff's the big, big brother guy. And so I look forward to, I hope that we're both looking forward to Taylor going far in Big Brother.
David, of course, alluding to the CBS reality show Big Brother, where one of my high school classmates, Taylor Hale, happens. Am I allowed to say her last name? Should we quack
yes,
that out? Westhoff?
It's all over the internet.
Okay, cool. Thank you. No need to quack then. But yeah, Taylor Hale was in my high school graduating class. And by the way, you can ask Westhoff for the live reaction. I was so furious when I saw that because I was like, Westhoff, I thought... We have a kid in our grade who's going to cure cancer. Sorry. That's just the, you know, Harvard undergrad, Harvard med school, spelling bee second place when we were in seventh grade. He was ranked a top 50 mustache in sporting history. Shout out. I'm not going to say his name again, but he's going to cure cancer. I'm pretty sure we have a kid in our class who's going to be a serial killer, so he'll be second. But then, like, I was thinking with my tennis stuff, maybe I could crack top three in terms of most accomplished in my high school graduating class. It's like, nope, she's on a season of Big Brother. She just passed me.
Honestly, so, you know, I think she can go pretty far. You know,
if she wins it, I'm screwed.
Because here's the thing is everyone's always going to be like, think that everyone's going to think that they can get her out at any time. But the thing is, then that person can just kind of stay on as a pawn for week after week and make it to at least the jury stage. And I don't like how, you know, the rest of the house has been treating her, but it seems like she's holding up well.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree. Well, with that added Big Brother talk for the fantastic David Gertler, our super producer, Daniel Westhoff, our friends at Turner, and from all of us here at both Cracked Rackets and the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, I'm your host, Alex Gruskin. David, what do we say on this episode of the Great Shot Podcast?
Hey, great shot.
And we will see you all next time. Thank you as always, David.
Thank you so much for having me, Alex. I do really appreciate it.
Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.